Hello and welcome everyone to another episode of Commander and Coffee, your source of all things brewing. Today we have with us a very special friend of mine, Josh from Elder Drunken Highlander.
That's me.
Hey, Josh. Hello.
I cut you off and said hello. Jump the gun. That's okay. I'm playing a turbo deck, so, you know.
Exactly. Josh has been around. You've probably seen me in a couple of his videos on his YouTube channel with his Pun City 2 recap and Oktoberfest were the two that I can remember off the top of my head. I don't know. Oh, you did Rip and Shim too. That was another one we went to. Yeah, so we've been to quite a few, and you've probably seen me on there, and now we're going to have to hear him in person now. So, Josh, why don't you start off by telling everybody what you do?
Okay. I'm Josh. I'm one of the members of Elder Drunken Highlander. We do weird casual deck techs and sometimes CDH event vlogs. I also have a podcast called The Punt Pals. That's a new thing. Our first episode just dropped today, 6/28/2023. So a while ago, if you heard this, I don't know how long it takes really to make an episode. How many hours? 2 or 3 hours? Probably.
Give or take.
So it'll still be 6/28 when you hear this. So go watch episode 1 of The Punt Pals. It's an episode of, it's called The Punts That Define Us, and it's awesome. Punt Pals is about the 75% of Magic players who don't win that game. So it's relatable content, I promise. And I also occasionally write for Eminence. I have some articles on the website that you can check out too.
Nice. I actually just listened to that episode of Punt Pals too. Punt Pals today. That's what I'm trying to say. And it was good. I really enjoyed it. It really normalizes these people that we see up in, you know, the top tables, that they're just like everybody else. They make mistakes and, you know, they don't always win.
No, in fact, we lose most of the time.
At least 75% of the time, you know?
Yes.
That's it, basically how it works. Mm-hmm. So what exactly is Elder Drunken Highlander about?
So essentially, we started out as a channel for me and Austin to put all of our weird decks, and then we brought in Kevin, who makes very, very overtuned decks, and that's more or less it. It's a home for all the crazy decks we build. We do stuff like, what's a good example? One of my favorite ones we've ever done is we built a deck where the goal of the deck was we're going to be running Prismatic Piper in the command zone, and it's going to be the correct choice for this strategy. There is no better commander for what we're trying to do than the Prismatic Piper. So
okay,
like that.
And it works. How did we do that? Now I'm really curious.
Prismatic Piper is a colorless white spell. Mm-hmm. So you can use things that reduce the cost of your white spells, like a copied Pearl Medallion, for example, to make them free. And then you can use Stormfront Riders, which says when it enters the battlefield, return a white creature to its owner's hand to continuously bounce it back and forth and make infinite 1/1 tokens.
I love that. Yeah. One of the other things that I really love about Elder Drunken Highlander is how involved with the community that they are, Josh and the others included. If I remember correctly, just recently you did a charity event?
Yes. Last weekend, we did a... We didn't actually do it. We just helped promote it. There's a charity tournament being put on by a local game store to help a local charity called Q+. They help with local LGBTQ youth programming and things like that. They're wonderful. There's a CDH tournament going on in support of that. And I rallied the troops and got everyone, hopefully, really motivated. I rallied the troops and got everyone really motivated to show up to the tournament. And they did a really good job. It's a big success. They've been fundraising for the entire year. And that tournament was not the entire year. They've been fundraising for the entire month of June because it's Pride Month. And that particular tournament was a pretty significant percentage of the money they made. So we absolutely love that.
We're here for that. That is fantastic, Josh. Thank you for doing what you do, for real.
It's really fun.
And thank you to them as well.
Yeah, I didn't actually put this one on. This is just someone else's event that I found out about, and I was like, oh, that's awesome. I would like to help with that. And I kind of inserted myself without asking.
No, but one of the other things that you did help out on greatly, it seems to be like your MO is basically helping out with all of these like charitable things and everything like that, is the project that you're working on with Eminence with the playmats.
Yes, yeah, that was awesome too. That's really true. Whenever I hear about a fun charity project, I love just to throw my energy at it because I have a lot of that. Yeah, they were doing prompts for art therapy, basically. I'm not sure exactly. I don't want to say art therapy if I'm not knowing exactly what it is, but some sort of thing where kids were doing art based on prompts. And the idea was that these prompts would be turned into a playmat or playmats and sold, and the proceeds would then go to benefit the kids who made them. And that's really awesome. And so I came up with a bunch of prompts, and I also got the kids at my job, because I run a bunch of programs for children at the job that I work at too, to help come up with prompts. So a lot of those prompts are actually generated from actual kids, which is really cool. So yeah, anytime I hear about a project like that, I'm like, oh, how can I help out? Let me help out, because it's fun. We love helping out.
Absolutely. And that's actually one of the reasons I wanted to have you on here too. And one of the reasons I wanted to have you as one of my first people that I brought back after our little hiatus is because of A, your energy, and B, how much you do for the community, because I am huge on the whole community support thing. And I thank you for that.
Thanks for having me on. It's really fun to be on stuff like this.
So now to the important question. Mm-hmm. What's your favorite caffeinated beverage?
Ooh. I think just regular English breakfast tea with nothing in it.
Any particular brand that you like or no?
I like Harney & Sons a lot. They're actually, okay. They have a shop really close to me that I go to sometimes.
We do like that. That's, I think, when I went to visit you, I think I had that, or I saw it at least.
Yeah, you probably saw my vast collection of Harney & Sons tea. I have this Harney & Sons whiskey tea, and it tastes like you put whiskey in your tea, but you don't get drunk, so you can have it in the morning before work. Or in my case, I can like bring it to work and have like whiskey tea at work, working with children.
Okay. We don't know anything about that, but yeah.
It doesn't smell like whiskey, right?
That's okay. Mm-hmm. Hey, it's still a brew. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess the whiskey tea is also really good, but like, that's not the kind of tea that you can have a ton of. That's like a special occasion thing because it tastes like whiskey, but it's great. We love black tea. That's my favorite caffeinated type beverage. Of tea.
Yeah.
I don't actually drink coffee. I used to work at a coffee shop. And they would ask me what certain flavors like tasted like. And I'd be like, I don't know. You tell me and I'll repeat what you say to the next customer.
It's just mimicking, parroting them, basically. Mm-hmm. Love that.
Yeah, coffee just makes me snoozy.
That's, I've actually heard that from a lot of people, just in general, that coffee does make people sleepy. I personally can have a cup of coffee and go to bed with no problem. Probably what I'm going to do tonight, to be quite honest, because...
Hell yeah.
I've been sleeping like a baby after that. So you mainly did a lot of casual, you said, to start. What brought you into CEDH?
That's an interesting story, actually. It's a long one. Buckle in.
Okay.
So I learned magic from with my little brother in like 2009 with cards from Homelands, Fallen Empires, Revised, couple other sets from that era that I'm forgetting, but Ice Age was the other big one. But like my deck was like green black flyers with Sengir Vampire and Hypnotic Spectre and Scrib Sprites and Birds of Paradise. It was very fun and very cool, but it wasn't very good compared to like the decks that are being played by people in 2010. And so I come to school and I go to bring my deck to play against people for the first time, and I get absolutely rolled by standard Eldrazi, like a standard Eldrazi deck, and Legacy Goblins, the two decks that I'm playing against. And I'm like, what the hell? So it turns out, everyone at my school is the younger sibling of this cadre of people who are Modern grinders. And they all, like, top 8 Modern tournaments. It's like, I'm like, reading website articles on, like, the mothership for Wizards, and I'm seeing the names of, like, my friends' older siblings, which is crazy. So... all of my friends just have hand-me-down, like, super try-hardy decks. Like the first game I played at school, I, like, turn one, Dark Ritual, Hypnotic Spectre, turn two, Attack. My friend discards an Ulamog, and I'm like, that's a fake card. That's not a real card, because I've never seen it before. And, like, no, it's real. And then Elvish Piper, there's an Ithapetraes, you're dead. Like, stuff like that. That's what I played against. So my friends have always been, like, super juiced. So we got into Commander. We were kind of playing, like... pseudo CDH decks already, just because we really liked Commander and we really enjoyed like playing that more than because we could play all at the same time, so we couldn't just break up into like 1v1s like when we used to play Standard, because we were Standard grinders before Commander was a thing. When we got into Commander, we were like, oh my god, this is awesome, you can play like more competitive games like as a group of four. And we had some crazy decks. I had like a Niv-Mizzet Storm deck because I would like try to draw a bunch of cards with Niv-Mizzet on the battlefield and kill with that, and then finish with the Grape Shot. This is like OG Niv-Mizzet the Fire Mine. This is like 2010, like right before the Commander decks get supported by Wizards at this point. And we have someone playing like Carador, but like not Boonweaver Carador, like some Reverie Lark combo Carador, which is like almost there. It's got Safi in the deck. It's like close to CEDH. A lot of decks that are like rubbing up on the line. And we're at Magic Club. At this point, this is 2012, 2013-ish. And we're playing Magic Club, and all the older siblings come and visit. And they bring their power cube, and we play, like, this is the first time I've touched a real mana drain. And I'm like, oh my god, this is so cool. Mana drain was a way bigger deal back then. And, like, I get to see, like, some of the power nine, and it's awesome. And we play this power cube, and at the end, we play a game of Commander. And one of them, like, sits down, and he says, guys, bring your best Commander decks. I want to try something. So we're like, okay. So I have Niff-Mizzet, my friend's got his Carador, and Austin, actually, this is the three other Drunken Highlander co-hosts, actually. It was me, Kevin, and Austin. So my other two co-hosts, Kevin and Austin, are playing. So Kevin had his Carador deck, and Austin was playing Godos Dax, which actually goes pretty close to a CDH deck at the time. Godos Dax used to be a thing before Helm of the Host.
Way back when, yeah.
Yeah, it was one of the more brutal ones, and Austin's always been a mono-red Stax guy. He just didn't have, like, the Argentum Armor tech yet, but he was close. Anyway. So, our three best decks, and we play against Shimmer Xur. And Shimmermere had literally just came out. Yeah, this is like 2012, actually, I think. Right? Shimmermere came out
in 2011? I believe so. I remember it was just after I started learning, so it had to be at least, because I learned how to play Magic in 2010. So, it was probably 2011, 2012, 2013, that three-year range.
This is the time period after Innistrad before Dark Ascension, because we had just done our first ever Innistrad draft at the week prior.
Yeah, so it had to be 2011, 2012.
So, I've been playing CDH for over a decade. That's crazy. So, we sit down, and he plays Shimmerzer, and he Necropotence, like, shimmers us, and, like, absolutely ruins our day, and kills us, like, turn 4, turn 5, or something stupid like that, which was crazy for CDH at the time. And we're like, what the hell? That was awesome! And he looks through all of our decks, and he's like, He goes through and he's like tells Kevin about Boonweaver. I forget what he said to Austin. He's like, your deck's pretty much fine. And then he looks at mine and he's like, do you know what the card Curiosity? And I'm like, the what? And he shows me Curiosity, explains how it works, and my mind is blown. So I start playing Curiosity Niv-Mizzet, and it's awesome. And that's when I got hooked into CEDH. So I played Niv-Mizzet the Fire Mine for a while. I also fucked around with Brea a little bit. I was embarrassingly a Yeva player for a few months. I played Mono Black Sadisi Fishbowl, trying to imitate the Shimmer guy. I've had a few different Abzan decks, but I could never stick with an Abzan deck. But 2016 was the Abzan era, man. You had to play Abzan in 2016. I just played a lot of decks, but I've mostly been like Niv-Mizzet Blue Red Core as my main deck. Even when I switched to Brea, it was Blue-Red Core, and then I switched back to Niv-Mizzet. So, that's my CDH journey, basically.
That explains so much in your deck choices, honestly. Like, that entire interaction and knowing how you play and knowing what you do, it explains exactly why you choose the decks that you choose.
I very much have a type. Yeah.
Yeah.
All of this actually started my entire style of playing Magic because I was a Yu-Gi-Oh player.
That makes sense too.
Yeah, I was an aspiring Yu-Gi-Oh tournament grinder, and the second ever Yu-Gi-Oh tournament that Austin was at this one too, that our group ever attended, someone got robbed at knife point for her cards by the person that she beat in the semis, and we were all like, and we're done with Yu-Gi-Oh. But Yu-Gi-Oh's whole like combo energy and turbo energy are things that I very much brought to my Magic playing, like my Magic playing play style.
Okay. So that was a lot. I was a little reeling over I don't mean your story.
Buckle in.
The Yu-Gi-Oh getting robbed at knife point. I always knew those.
Oh yes.
Yu-Gi-Oh players were bad news.
Yu-Gi-Oh players behave like, at least in my personal experience, the competitive Yu-Gi-Oh players that I was exposed to in the 2013, 2012, 2014. No, I stopped by 2013, 2012 era of Yu-Gi-Oh with like XYZs and stuff and Synchros being big. They behaved like the people from the Yu-Gi-Oh anime, and they talked like the people from the Yu-Gi-Oh anime with the same cadence and everything. They would talk like this. It was Very cringe.
We are not sorry if you're a Yu-Gi-Oh! Player and you're offended by what we're saying. Why are you listening to our podcast? But thank you for listening to our podcast. Please tune in.
I mean, I don't know that much about Yu-Gi-Oh! Nowadays. Maybe it's different. But, and could just been like the local scene was terrible. We are in the greater New York City area. That is where we were when we got mugged, was in New York City. So, you know, that could be part of it. I don't want to generalize Yu-Gi-Oh! Players, but...
we can, so it's okay. Yeah. That's not a problem. So, with all that said, what deck do you have for us today?
I got my favorite deck, I think, for CDH. At least the favorite deck that I built. I play Brahlin Shabraz a lot, and I would say that might actually be my favorite deck, but I didn't build that deck. I net decked that deck and just kind of stole it from the other people who played it by playing it more than them. This deck is one that I actually built. And my iteration, at least, is called the Road to El Discardo, but you might know it more as Tana Malcolm, Teamer Pirates, Tropical Malcolm, or the Road to El Discardo.
Exactly. Yeah. And there will be links for it in our description and everything, so you'll be good there. So take me through it. Talk to me. Give a little brief rundown of what it does, how it does, and why it does.
So essentially, this is a Glinthorn Buccaneer Malcolm combo deck where I'm trying to put Glinthorn Buccaneer into play with Malcolm to attack, create two treasures, and then spend those two treasures on Glinthorn Buccaneer's ability, which will discard a card, deal a damage to each opponent, create three treasures, and draw me a card. At that point, I can repeat the process until all my opponents are dead from taking one damage over and over again from Glinthorn Buccaneer triggering after I discard a card. That's it. There's also a Kiki combo in there. For a while, I was playing Dual Caster Mage and Niv-Mizzet, but I recently got rid of both of those guys. But other than that, it's just put Teamer good stuff into play, turn Teamer good stuff into Glinthorn Buccaneer with Malcolm, win as fast as possible. If it doesn't work the first time, figure out a way to
do it. Yeah, now this deck, it has access to green, so you have access to things like Eldritch Evolution, Finale of Devastation, Neoform. That's going to get you from like your dorks into your Glinthorn Buccaneer a lot faster than, say, something like a Malcolm Vile Smasher deck, or I've seen some Malcolm Breaches because they're both pirates floating around. You know, some crazy things like that.
Yep. Malcolm Dargo. Malcolm
Bruce. Yeah, Malcolm Dargo, Malcolm whatever, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Malcolm just goes with everything. It's a flying 2/2, you know, that gets you a treasure. It's mana ramp on a stick. It's a blue mana dork, basically.
Yeah, he's awesome. Yeah, the advantage of this deck over other Malcolm decks is we put Glinthorn Buccaneer directly into play. Most green tutors say Glinthorn Buccaneer is now on the battlefield, comma, baby. And that bad boy has haste. So you get to attack and do the thing immediately. So there's a huge, huge advantage to being able to sacrifice a like Llanowar Elves and to a Eldritch Evolution and use that Llanowar Elves to pay for the Eldritch Evolution. And then that Llanowar Elves then gets turned into a Glinthorn Buccaneer that wins the game. That's the real advantage of this deck, and it's awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic. This deck is really quick. It's very fun, but it also has the potential to go a little bit later. It could hang out a little bit and kind of keep up with some of the faster decks or switch to a mid-range strategy if it absolutely needs to.
Yep.
Let's talk about the elephant in the room. What about Orcish Bowmasters that just came out? Oh, are you afraid of that?
I don't want to talk about Orcish Bowmasters on the podcast. When is this going to be released?
It'll be out. I'm probably going to do it sometime next month.
Oh, okay. You know, enough time will have passed that everyone else will have figured this out by now. Yeah. This deck does not give a flying fuck about Orcish Bowmasters.
Okay.
So if the Orcish Bowmasters comes out before we start to combo, then it might be a bit of an issue because Malcolm's probably going to catch strays. That's just how it is. Malcolm is just the juiciest removal target on the battlefield at all points in time. That's just, I don't make the rules. That's just how it goes. However...
Yeah, no, I agree.
However, that being said, if someone tries to stop us from winning with an Orcish Bowmasters, they can't. This is why. So we begin our combo, right? We have to pay one colorless and one red to activate Glinthorn Buccaneer, discarding a card, and then dealing one damage to everybody through Glinthorn Buccaneer's other effect, which will trigger when we discard a card. Then Malcolm triggers and makes three treasures. From that point, we regain priority and can repay to activate it again. So when we draw our card again... Right? That's when Orcish Bowmasters trigger. The trigger goes onto the stack. We've drawn our card after we've already made the treasure from Malcolm. I wish that I could, like, illustrate this for you, but how it works is We discard a card from our hand with Glinthorn Buccaneer. Trigger on the stack, Glinthorn Buccaneer does 1 damage to each opponent. Trigger on the stack, Malcolm makes 3 treasures. Then the rest of the Glinthorn Buccaneer's ability resolves and we draw a card. Trigger on the stack, Orcish Bowmasters increases its army and deals 1 damage to something. You can respond to that trigger by paying 2 mana and discarding the card you just drew to draw another card.
Absolutely.
And then so you can just perpetually leave the Orcish Bowmasters trigger on the stack and just kill the Orcish Bowmasters player.
Yep, you could kill them before any of the Orcish Bowmaster triggers actually fully resolve.
Yeah,
because that is also its own triggered ability.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of like ways that this deck can get around things just by activating Glinthorn Buccaneer a second time.
Oh yeah, not only that, you also have things to redirect damage. Spellskite, Sylvan Safekeeper, or Spellskite to redirect damage, Sylvan Safekeeper just to give something Shroud.
Yep, and we have like Dosin too now.
Yeah.
That's something I just added to the deck. I haven't actually gotten to cast him yet. I saw him in the tournament I was just in, but I was winning that turn anyway, and there's a Telepathy on the board, so I knew I didn't need Dosin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Telepathy is a real interesting tournament card.
Isn't it? Knowledge is power, just like G.I. Joe says.
I think what Telepathy actually says is that it just increases the player skill advantage gap. Because what happened when that telepathy hit the battlefield is instead of what I thought would happen is I would just get absolutely ruined. Is the other players just started just talking about what was in everyone's hands. And my only thought was, oh, hey, I can win through this. And it was great. It was great. I just like the amount of things I had to worry about were so much less. So I think if I was playing against a bunch of people who were also just like knew my bullshit and were like equipped to deal with it better, I think it would have been more fucked there. But what actually happened is like I don't think they knew my deck very well. I don't think they ever played against it, and I played against all of their decks, and Telepathy just kind of king made me. So
that definitely helps out quite a bit. Especially when you're, I don't want to use the term smarter than the other people at the table, but
I don't think I was smarter than the other people at the table. I don't think they'd played against my deck before, and the person with the telepathy, the only person with hidden information, casted Imp Seal, and I had a Ragavan in my hand, and there's also a Toxic Deluge in another player's hand. So they were talking about me Ragavanning the Imp Seal, and I was misdirecting and mentioning the Toxic Deluge, and they were like doing like math on those two things, and I think they just didn't know my deck well enough to know that my deck doesn't care about anything besides winning this turn usually. And so the correct answer was neither of those things is what I'm going to do my turn. I'm going to cast this Bring to Light and hope that nobody has interaction, which is what I'd be doing even without the telepathy. So,
yeah. So what do you think the turn average win is?
3.
You're looking for turn 3 at least?
Yeah, it's a turn 3 win deck. Very consistent.
Okay.
Yep.
This is a neat card that I really like there. Combat Research.
Yeah, it's a new one. That one is in there for Orcish Bowmasters, kind of.
Okay.
So I think Ward 1 just kind of discourages Malcolm from being targeted with catching strays, basically. Incidental stuff. Also, being able to draw an extra card is great. Having an extra toughness is pretty great. I think it's +1, right? Not to actually
Plus card. +1.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yep.
Having extra toughness is really great. And just being able to, Malcolm's got flying, he usually connects every turn, so drawing an extra card every turn is really, really good. I really like that. I was on Curiosity for a bit, because it does things with Glint, but I didn't really like it as much, especially after I cut Niv, there wasn't much reason for it. So this is kind of a replacement for it, and that it still gets me some card advantage over time, and is only 1 mana. I'm not super happy with this card. This is probably the most cuttable card in the entire list. I thought about cutting it for Chart the Course, or another Cantrip, or Jeskha's Will is another one that I'm thinking about. I could also put Wheel of Fortune back in. I've been considering just shoving Eternal Witness back in there. It's kind of my flex slot. But right now, I'm testing it out. I haven't had a chance to actually cast it.
Okay. Another card that I think is super spicy, which I personally ran in my Najeela deck for a while, Bring to Light.
Yes. That card's so good. Underrated.
Love Bring to Light.
Underrated card. Especially in decks that make treasures. I can get Kiki with this thing in my 3-color deck.
Yeah, that is one of the greatest things about it. It's like, oh yeah, I'm just going to crack this for 5. And they look at you, they're like, you're only a 3-color deck. What do you got for 5? And then you just slam Kiki Jiki.
Yep.
And you're like, hey, come at me.
Yeah, Bring to Light is a really, really great spell. I think more people should play Bring to Light. If you're in a deck that wants to put a creature directly into play, Bring to Light, baby. No one plays Rule of Law anymore.
No, it's very, very few and far between nowadays. There's only a select couple decks that tend to run the rule of law effects. I mean, Winota's one of them, but you also have so many answers to getting rid of,
you know, Winota's most of Winota's rule of law effects, not Winota, a good chunk of Winota's rule of law effects don't actually work on Bring to Light. Deafening Silence, for example.
Because you're getting a creature.
You're getting a creature. Yeah, yeah. Or Aethersworn Canonist. You can just go get Corridor Monitor. Haha. I mean, that doesn't actually. You're still getting bricked. But I have actually gotten Spellskite or Corridor Monitor through a Aethersworn Canonist before. Spellskite is actually not or Corridor Monitor, just Spellskite. I've literally gotten Spellskite through an Aethersworn Canonist before because it's an artifact spell and I can do that. And Spellskite is a great card to have on the battlefield.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. People don't realize how much Spellskite stops until it stops it.
You can't win with Deadeye Navigator with Spellskite. Yep.
You also can't win with this happened in the one tournament that I was at. I think it was Rip and Chip one. Yeah, I was personally on my Kinnan deck, and I had a Spellskite down, and a kid went to cast Swift Reconfiguration targeting his Devoted Druid, and I went, I'd like to pay 2 life and redirect it to my Spellskite.
Yep.
I've never seen somebody die inside like this guy did.
Yeah. Yeah. Same with Deadeye. It's like Deadeye enters the battlefield. They're like, okay, Soul Bomb with Dockside. And like, no, Soul Bomb with Spellskite, motherfucker.
Just get it. You could also redirect, like, if somebody's trying to Sylvan Safe Creep their own thing, you'd be like, no, it's on Spellskite now.
Yeah. Also, you know? Hyrax Tower Scout.
Yep. So there's so many like of that effect that just gets stopped by it.
Yeah. I was in tier one con and I drew a game because I had Spellskite on the battlefield and someone was trying to do a flicker combo, but the card that they needed to flicker could be redirected from Spellskite.
Nice. Almost like a Kiki and Resto sort of thing.
I think it was literally a Hyrax Tower Scout. It was Emil and some other thing.
Oh, okay. So probably with the Cradle and going nuts with that, like the old Drevi combo with Emil.
It wasn't Cradle, it was Bloom Tender. So I think it was Pyrex Tower Scout.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. T1 Con was a long time ago, okay?
Yeah, and I could barely remember yesterday, so I understand.
Oh no, what I mean by that is like the meta's changed. People were running Bloom Tender Emil loops.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
So I mean, while on that, what do you think the meta's like? How do you feel this deck in particular is positioned in the meta?
I think the meta is a lot less defined than people like to think it is or say it is.
Oh, 100%. It's a fluid. It's effectively a cat, in my opinion.
It depends.
The meta is a cat.
I think it depends on where you play. Like if Rip and Ship, we've both been there. They call that mid-range mountain. We know what the meta's like there. That's Tim Necrom land. If you're not playing Tim Necrom, good fucking luck. It's you got to be playing some kind of deck that can deal with the fact that people are going to be throwing all manners of answers at you and rather similar ways to win. The tournament I was just in, not a single game went past turn 3.
Okay.
Every single game was over by turn 2, turn 3.
Okay.
Yep.
That's interesting.
So that's really depends on where you're at. We're both in a similar practice group, right?
Yep.
It's Hot Boy Mardu summer in our practice group right now. You cannot see a blue deck, and you cannot see a turn 3. It just doesn't happen. It does not occur. This deck is like being the only blue deck. It's like, I better hope I'm going first or second. That's the kind of meta it's in, like that we're in there. But if I go to my locals, if I play this deck, like which is the deck that I would play in the I'm not going to see a turn 3 meta, if I play this deck, I'm just going to get absolutely ruined because everyone's playing super, super slow, grindy, stacks light decks, and they're just going to collectively agree, okay, so we kill Josh first, and then we play Magic, and that's how it's going to go, because I picked Tana Malcolm. So I think it really depends on where you play.
No, absolutely. So is and, I mean, we know from the SoCal meta, I mean, CCU just had Teferi.
CCU is in 2018 with their meta, and I love it. I love
that. I'm here for it. I mean, cool. As a CVT player, Chainveil Teferi player, one of my original decks, I am here for that. I am so glad that that's sticking around. I thought Urza pushed that away, and then that person won again. So what's that, 2 in a row for them?
Yep, 2 in a row.
Hey, listen, they're doing something right. I mean, indeed. CVT still got legs.
In fucking deed. You know, I used to one of my CDH decks that I've had for a while is a Neon B Polymorph deck, And I made that deck because CVT was dominating my locals. And the guy who played it, shout outs to Gavin if you're listening to this, I love you. The guy, he probably doesn't even remember me. The guy who that who played it a bunch was like really dominant with it, and so I made Fane Veil Teferi with Niambi, who got the other 6-mana Teferi, the blue-white one, and it would try to like be parasitic off of his stacks and then just only kill him and then use his stacks to keep everyone else down and then win that way. And it was hilarious.
It was hilarious. Don't you still have that together?
Yes. So what I was going to say is that I still have that deck because it's one of the few decks I can actually build in paper. And I brought it to the tournament last weekend and I loaned it to my boyfriend. And he actually did really well with it. I had people coming up to me being like, is it true it's only like his 6th game of CEDH? Because he tried to win 3 times. And I'm like, yeah. Everyone who touches me is good at Magic. It was great.
Nice.
Yeah, deck still has legs.
It does have legs, yeah. I mean, I saw it, and I'm like, okay, that's interesting. And then you started doing stuff, and I went, oh, I have to pay attention now.
Yep, it's not a troll deck.
It was scary. Good.
It's comparable to Shorokai.
Okay.
I wouldn't know if that's a good way to put Shorokai, that. But I'd say it's comparable to Shorokai.
Okay. We're here for that. We're here for that. It's one of my other favorite decks.
It's a great deck. Yeah, Tom Malcolm is a little bit faster than that deck. I don't know. So, yeah, my point is, I don't know if this deck is good into, like, the meta, but the metas that it's good in are metas where either nothing much happens in the first 3 turns of the game, or everything happens in the first 3 turns of the game. If it's the type of game where people are resolving light stacks in the first 3 turns of the game, or keeping hands with interactions so they don't die in the first 3 turns of the game, that's not a good pod for this deck to be in. But if you're up against other turbo decks, or if you're up against decks that are trying to be like trying like set up in the first 3 turns of the game, your Yisans, your Winotas, Tyum. Tyum's a great matchup for this deck. Then in that case, this is a deck to be playing. So it really depends on like what you're playing against and pod composition.
So let's narrow it down a little more. We're both going to the cookout.
Okay.
Okay. What do you think? How do you think this is positioned in that meta? Now, I know we have, I mean, I personally have not been down to any tournaments down in the southern parts of the states myself. They might have a totally different meta. I mean, we both went to Punt City 2, and I know a lot of the players that went to Punt City 2 are also going to the cookout. How do you think that's positioned in that area?
I think for most Eminence events, we're going to see, like we see for most Eminence events, we're going to see a lot of popular decks. I think we're going to see a lot of Najila. I think we're going to see a lot of Blue Farm. I think we're going to see a lot of, like, the standards, so to speak. Rog'Sai, that kind of stuff. I think it's going to be very well positioned in that meta against the standards, the other database decks, if you will.
Right. Shout out EDH Top 16.
Yes.
for all your deck building needs, like if you want to just be me personally, and I know we've said this multiple times on the podcast, I'm results based. I want to see the decks that performed in an event and actually had wins put up performance, and EDH Top 16 does that for me. So that's why I personally am a big fan of that.
Yeah, same.
So
my deck's on there.
It is. That's actually, I'm not gonna lie, that's how I found it.
Yeah. Crazy. Did you find it from
weird how that works?
Did you find it from this weekend?
No, I did not see it this weekend.
I don't know if that one's on EDH Top 16.
I don't know yet.
But if it is, then you can see the infamous Niambi deck too.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I have it pulled up right now. Hold on, let me see Niambi. No, Niambi's not on there yet.
So they haven't put their info in then.
No, they might not have made the marked it in Command Tower yet. So
I see.
Anyway, that's okay. Soon.
Yeah, this deck doesn't do well against a lot of scrutiny, and it doesn't do well against a lot of, I guess, like, yeah, just a lot of scrutiny. If more than one player is like, fuck that deck, I'm not letting it win, then it's not going to win. And so that's the kind of meta that you want to keep away from.
Okay. So what would you say your biggest fear is with the deck?
Having someone in the pod decide to pull interaction into their opening hand just for my deck.
Okay.
It happens
a
lot.
So early interaction?
Yeah, I think the problem with this deck isn't actually a problem with the deck itself. It's a problem with the way other players perceive the deck. And to elaborate on that, what I mean by that is if this deck does indeed fold hard to scrutiny, this is like the third time I've said that. If someone decides, I'm going to keep Pyroblast in my opening hand, and as soon as Josh casts Malcolm, I'm hitting that shit with Pyroblast, I will not win. That's how it goes. However, that is not always the correct play to make for most players. And oftentimes, when I'm on the receiving end of this, because I'm on the receiving end of this a lot, I will take note of the person who does it, and that person usually does not win the game. And it's because when you try not to lose, you're not trying to win. And that's just how it works, right? A lot of people say you have to not lose in order to win, but also, like, if you're not losing, you can't win. So, you know, you have to, like, figure out how to not lose while you're trying to win. That's what they mean by that. But if you focus too hard on not losing, you're going to lose too. So I think the problem with this deck is some people just see it as something to be taken down and focus on taking it down. And then I get taken down, and then you have two players out of the game. And I see myself in situations like that in pods a lot. And it's very, very unfortunate. But also, there's not much you can do about it because they're right. I am out of the game. And also, it's hard to tell. Like, wow, it's like I can't. Sometimes I will literally be able to tell, like, okay, they kept that opening hand particularly purely on the back because it stopped my tech. Or sometimes just like, okay, I'm probably just catching strays, and that person just had the lightning bolt and the one red mana and was just like, heck it, I'll blast the Malcolm before I untap. That's fair, you know? And so you have to kind of be able to perceive which one it is. And the only way you can really stop that is trying to get people to understand the deck more and understand the windows that it uses and how to stop it better. Because it's advantageous for both you and your opponents if they stop you at the last possible minute, right? You want them to keep their resources so that they can use them to maybe stop a different player. If they use their resources too early on you and then someone else wins, they have literally thrown the game. That's how it works. So it's good to encourage your opponents to interact at the points where it actually matters. But then if you're doing that, they're not going to listen to you because they're like, well, you're telling me to do this, and clearly you just want to win, so I'm not going to do that. And so that's the problem with the deck. It's this whole complicated perception issue where it's hard to even have the conversation of what to do and when people can interact in the deck because it's a biased conversation.
Yeah, I think the last time that you and I played, something similar happened, and then you just kind of like went out of nowhere. I was at Kinnan, and you just kind of got there just out of nowhere. You were even surprised because you were not feeling well at all. And then you're like, oh, I just top decked that. Shucks.
Yeah, that's how the deck works. It's great. That's the other reason I'm like, don't just waste your crap on the Malcolm, because it's very much a luck sack deck, and you can waste your crap on the Malcolm when I start to do something relevant with it.
Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah, I think the deck's ability just to win out of nowhere is really, really great. That's why I don't play a lot of card advantage in the deck, because there's so much action every time I draw. If it's not a land, or sometimes even if it is a land, I'm going places. And it's great. It's really, really great.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But yeah, like, being able to like win out of nowhere is one of the better parts of the deck. But it's not really out of nowhere. That's the whole point, right? It requires setup. I need to have Malcolm and Glenhorn Buccaneer on the battlefield in order to, quote, win out of nowhere, unquote. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so,
yeah, but the bonus of that is that Glinthorn does have haste. So if you could get six mana, two red, one blue.
It's not six, it's seven. You need seven.
Oh, yeah, because you need to activate. I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right.
You need seven mana because Glinthorn Buccaneer needs one mana to activate, plus the treasure that he makes from dealing combat damage. So you need seven mana and an open attack.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, and then he can start going.
Yeah. There's been so many times, like three or four times at tournaments, where I've used my Glinthorn Buccaneer as a removal spell, where I've like got put in someone in a situation like, I'm attacking with this Glinthorn Buccaneer, and if you let it through, I'll have enough mana to win the game, and if you don't let it through, then I'm killing your important creature that you're going to use to win the game on your turn, bitch. And I've done that before. I've just like forced them to block with the Glinthorn Buccaneer. It's really funny. It usually means that I'm not winning the game either, and I'm in a very bad spot. Or my Eternal Witness is in my hands, and I don't care. But, it's never really the best for me, but it's really funny every time it happens.
Yeah, it's definitely putting your opponents in, like, a very awkward position. It's probably one of the best feelings in the world.
Yeah. How did I win that game with you? Did I Kiki combo?
I think you did.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember
it. You Eldritch Evolution something, and we're like, yeah, I guess so. And okay.
Oh, yep, I remember. I EE'd Malcolm into Kiki. Because I chop deck Dockside.
Yep. And then you Dockside it again.
Yep.
And then I think you somehow did something else to end up getting Malcolm and Glinthorn out at the same time because you had more than enough treasures. Because you were like four mana short. And then next thing you know, you were like six mana over.
Yeah, so I had two tutors in my hand, and neither of them would have gotten me there, because I didn't have the only creature I could EE was Malcolm. So I EE'd Malcolm and then recast Malcolm. So I did EE Malcolm into Kiki, cast Dockside, double Dockside, make more treasures than God, recast Malcolm, recast Glinthorn, attack, and then I had enough to manually do the loop in response to removal.
Yeah. But remember, Orcish Bowmasters is the problem.
Orcish Bowmasters is one of the best cards to be added to Commander in a long time. That's my take.
I 100% agree. I
play
love
this
card.
Deck, a deck with a 2 toughness Commander that relies on drawing cards at crucial moments, and my other deck is Wheels, and I love Orcish Bowmasters.
Yes. I want to bring you back on to talk about that deck one day, because that is probably one of my... Between Braylon Shabraz and Zyrus, those are my two favorite decks that I've ever seen you play against me.
Yeah, I love both of those decks. They're so, so fun. Wheels is such a fun strategy. And it's, I love Wheels and Commander because of the fact that I'm giving 3 people 21 cards. That's why a lot of people don't like it, but I'm like, I don't know. I think that's hilarious to me. And it's not as bad of a disadvantage as people say it is. It's not even really a disadvantage.
No, it's almost break-even at this point.
It is
with the amount of the interaction that we're all playing at the same time, it kind of works out to being about the same. So
it's just a stacks effect, and you're breaking parity on it.
Mm-hmm. Because you get to use those cards first.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, that's
I love it.
That's the Wheels thing. But yeah, I don't play black in any of my Wheels decks, and I love Orcish Bowmasters. So I think it's a cool card. Yeah, this deck is not really a Wheels deck though. I only have Time Twister in here as the only wheel.
Yeah, and you more or less use Time Twister to reset your graveyard.
Yep.
If there's something that's in your graveyard. I know I've seen you do that
I
multiple times
for it
at different
as well
types of
if
things.
I mulligan low or if I need a hand refill. But yeah, that's basically it, is a graveyard reset. Now that Eternal Witness is gone, it's my only graveyard reset.
You have Noxious Revival in here.
Yeah, that's not a reset. That's just one card.
That's fair.
I can loop it, though, with Noxious.
You can. You indeed can.
Not
so
I would want to, but yeah.
That's fair. One of the other things that we would like to do here is go over some sample hands. You down for a couple sample hands?
I am down for some sample hands. Heck yeah.
All right, cool. All right, so our first hand up, we have Gemstone Caverns, Cavernous Souls, Soul Ring, Blusterstorm, Misdirection, Finale of Devastation, and Elvish Spirit Guide. If we're going first, what are your thoughts?
If you're going first, this is a fine hand. If it's first 7, I'd mulligan this. If it's second 7, I'd keep this.
Okay. Now, if we're going second through fourth.
If we're going second through fourth, this is a pretty good hand. I'd probably keep this. It's
okay.
Actually, going first, I might even mulligan this second 7. I might mulligan this to 6. It's because there's no green source. You have to rely on treasures from Malcolm.
Well, you are effectively are a mold to 7 or mold to 6 right now with if you're going second because pitching Gemstone Caverns.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So
Gemstone is
if you did keep it
in his hand, you don't really need it, but it's there.
No, if you did keep it, what would you pitch to it? I know my answer. So
probably it'd be either the Spirit Guide or the Flusterstorm, depending on composition of the pod.
Okay. See, I'd actually pitch the Misdirection.
So I can see why you'd want to pitch Misdirection, because it's the worst counterspell, and Flusterstorm will stop more things. But what I'm seeing with this hand is a turn 3 win attempt.
That's what I'm seeing, too.
And Misdirection will protect that, because you're going to have Xaxxes mana for it. Flusterstorm won't help you, because you're not going to have the mana to cast it.
Okay.
So actually, this is even a turn 2. So if you turn 1 Malcolm by going Gemstone Caverns, get rid of the Fluster... then Elvish Spirit Guide into Soul Ring, or even just play Cavernous Souls into Soul Ring and then cast Malcolm. Then on the next turn, you untap. If you draw a green source, you have Soul Ring, Cavernous Souls, Gemstone Caverns. That's 4 mana from that, plus the Spirit Guide, and then your green source. You can X equals 3 a finale really easily for Glint on turn 2.
Right, and you already have Malcolm down, so...
Yeah, so you want a green source. You want the potential of having a blue card to pitch to Misdirection for it. If you do draw a card. So let's say you draw a blue spell first and then a land is a turn 3 win. Yeah, there you go. You draw a land eventually. So by the time you have that miscast, you have enough treasures from Malcolm to go for it on turn 3 with exact mana, and the miscast then protects you with the Misdirection. So we drew last chance and Do you want to like say the name of the cards out loud? Would they see it?
Yeah, we drew for turn one, we drew a last chance, and for turn two, we drew a miscast.
Yeah.
So we do have something to pitch to Misdirection to protect ourselves. And it's still a turn three win, which is still our turn two win. I'm sorry.
No, turn three win. We needed a land for it to be turn two win. Right? Or maybe I'm wrong.
No.
No, yeah, you're right.
It's Exaxes.
Yeah, it's Exaxes. Yeah.
Yeah, because with the turn one Malcolm down, you could still do damage. Damage happens. Combat's still a thing. Lithorn's still an attacker. You'll have the two treasures to activate and go nuts.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's do another one. How's that sound?
Indeed. All right. So we have Forest, Wooded Foothills, Jeweled Lotus, Mana Vault, Corridor Monitor, Reflecting SWAT, Quarter Calling. If this was like, if I was willing to like five or six, I might consider keeping this. But otherwise, I don't know, man. This is not a great hand.
Yeah, so, this kind of looks like a trap hand here. Like, yeah, you could cast a turn one Malcolm, but you're not potentially, yeah, with a Mana Vault out, but you're not winning at all until at least turn
three,
four.
No,
turn three, turn four.
So you have a Forest and a Wooded Foothills. Wooded Foothills can get yourself a tropical island, which means you have two green sources, which means you just need one treasure and three extra mana, which the Mana Vault provides. So what you do is you turn one Malcolm, turn two attack with Malcolm, make a treasure, turn three Court of Calling for Glinthorn Buccaneer with a Deflecting SWAT backup, which is pretty okay. The reason I'd say it's a trap hand is turn three is, well, it depends on how soon it is. If this is like a five, I would probably keep this and pitch a land. But the reason, I don't know, maybe it's not as much of a trap hand as I thought originally.
Yes, that's what I'm going, actually, this doesn't seem too bad. It's right on par with how you want to do it. You have some slight protection with Deflecting SWAT. You know, I mean, it's effectively a mold of six because the corridor monitor is kind of useless.
Here's why it's awkward. Is because the Wooded Foothills has to get a Taiga or a Trop.
Because you need another green source for the Quarter Calling.
Right. And that's why I'm hesitant about this hand. Is because if you do get stopped, then you're relying on Malcolm specifically to make your mana colors. And then if Malcolm dies, which he probably will if you get stopped, then you're super SOL. You can't really even pivot with that Quarter. Let's say Malcolm gets killed early. You don't have much ability to use that Quarter Calling to pivot into Kiki, even though Corridor Monitor is in hand, because you need green mana. So,
right.
And you don't have any creatures to convoke with it either, because you can't really cast that Corridor Monitor. So, it's... I don't know. But there is the cool synergy with Corridor Monitor and Mana Vault, too. This is on the fence. This is an on-the-fence hand. This is like, it would depend on turn order, it depend on pod composition, it depend on how low my mulligan I was.
Absolutely. Let's do another one.
Now, this is a trap hand.
Yeah. All right, go ahead.
Four lands, one of which is Gemstone Caverns, Corridor Monitor, Cyclonic Rift, Glinthorn Buccaneer.
I was really hoping that we randomized into one that had Glinthorn in hand.
This is a turn two Malcolm, turn three Glinthorn Buccaneer. Yeah. Except, think about the play. First of all, there's no protection. We have no way to protect the Glinthorn Buccaneer, which is a big deal. The other thing is, think about the play patterns here. We're going to Gemstone Caverns pitching a land. That's already going to make people go, oh, okay, it's a land-heavy hand. Then we're going to play another land on turn one and either cast a Corridor Monitor uselessly or pass. Probably pass.
Most likely pass.
That's a big WTF moment. If this is a seven that we're keeping, our opponents are going to suss out immediately we have the turn three win. And anyone who's played this deck even once before is going to be like, it's probably literally Glinthorn Buccaneer because... not keeping a way to turbo out a turn like keeping that many lands in your hand, obviously, and then not having a second creature to Eldritch Evolution or Neoform after a turn two Malcolm, that's sus. That's like, okay, they don't have enough mana to do any crazy stuff to get Glint unless they have a Dockside that they're sandbagging. They don't have another creature to pod or Neoform or anything like that, so they have to have just Glinthorn. It's like, it's a very projected play, and you're completely naked. You have no protection. So, again, this is something I'd keep if I was a little desperate, but not something I would keep otherwise.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is. I'm really glad that this hand came up, because this is the one that people go like, oh my god, it's a turn three win! Yeah.
No, it's not. You're not going to win on turn three with this.
Yeah, like, even if we go for... Let's go for three draws and see what we get. So we get drew a Birds of Paradise, which is actually a great turn one play. That actually speeds us up one turn.
If you swap a Birds of Paradise for one of those lands, then it's no longer a bad hand.
No. Yeah. Odawara, and March of Swirling Mist. So still no protection in those three draws. You just end up getting yourself out with the Birds of Paradise draw, which you didn't know about.
Well, you could March of Swirling Mist to protect your Glinhorn Buccaneer from removal by pitching the Cyclonic Rift or Corridor Monitor.
Yeah.
Using the treasure that you got on turn two from Malcolm. But that's not really a great solution.
Right, that's just protecting your Glinhorn. That's not protecting the combo.
Yeah, it's just not dying. Not having your Glinhorn die.
Yeah.
It's not great. You can also channel Odawara on it, I guess. But yeah, it's not the best.
Yeah. It's like, you could be doing so much better things.
100%.
All right, one more for the good luck.
Yeah. When this deck first got brewed, I was like super all in on the turbo stuff. I was just me doing this at first. I was very, very all in on the turbo stuff. And the other people brewing this deck were trying to make it like a pseudo stacks mid rangey deck. And when I finally linked up with other people who were like, oh, this deck is fast. Well, I can't say things. When I finally linked up with other people who were like, oh, this deck is fast, Vasher, DJ Yajimaya, Julin Plus, and eventually, further down the road, Zane, it was a very, very different deck once we started adding to it, and the mentality was very different. So I think slower hands like that one would have been better if this deck was like, play Malcolm and some light stacks and keep the control spell and a card advantage engine and chill. That would be a better hand, but this deck is trying to very linearly combo out in a very consistent and repeatable way. So, like that.
Absolutely. It is a very linear deck when you know it, but like it's also, again, I don't know how many times we could say it, it sometimes just gets there out of nowhere. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And by out of nowhere, it's broadcasted, but it just, especially since most things put Glinthorn into play, you're just like, yep, here I did the thing.
That's why I've been thinking about that telepathy game so much. It's like, I realized throughout the game, it's like, I'm basically playing every single game with telepathy when I play this deck.
Yeah.
And honestly,
that's not a terrible idea.
Honestly, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
This hand is very, very, very weird. This is Scalding Tarn, Windswept Heath, Snap, Ragavan, Dockside, Sylvan Safekeeper, Bring to Light. If I was in the bottom half of turn order, I would snap keep this, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
If I was in the top half of turn order, I don't know.
I think if you're first or fourth, this is a snap keep. Because no matter what, you're playing pretty much turn one Ragavan, and then you get to see what everybody else does for the turn two Dockside, potential turn two Dockside.
There's an argument to be made if you're going first to play the turn one Sylvan Safekeeper and hold the Ragavan back to dash in and steal a tutor.
Oh, interesting. That's not a bad idea either.
Yeah, because if you're going first, then you can benefit from that turn two Dockside mana. You can probably make four or five, in which case you can Malcolm and dash in the Ragavan, which will then make two treasures and increase the chances of you being able to steal a Imperial Seal and actually cast the card being searched for, which is really nice. And it doesn't really set you back that much further. If you're going later in the turn order, I think it's better just to put out that turn one Ragavan, especially because you don't want to be taking risks going second or going third or fourth with this deck. You want to be just playing it by the book. But if you're going first, I think you can afford to put the Sylvan Safekeeper in first and maybe bluff a little bit.
Saying that you're basically having a slower hand, you're like, oh no.
Yeah, honestly, or something, depending on pod composition, something I might literally do is like play the turn one Sylvan Safekeeper, and if someone makes a comment, I might like reveal the Dockside to the table or mention that I have a Dockside, because that would really fuck the table up.
you are a good table talker too.
That'd be a great way to deter some game plans. And you have a snap for the Dockside too. You're gonna get your Bring to Light mana. Even Dockside on three is plenty. So if like there's three artifacts on the board and someone's like, why'd you play Sylvan Safekeeper, Josh? And I was like, so I can play this turn two Dockside. That'd be hilarious. And very, very worth it for me if people held back their artifacts and then were tight on mana for my ridiculous turn two shenanigans. So there's a lot to do with this hand. There's a lot to do with this hand. So I like it. Yeah, I like it unless I'm going second. If I'm going second, then I don't like it as much.
Then you're like really depressed and you're just like, oh.
I'd probably but,
like,
keep it even anyway. Then, I keep it I anyway. I'd just be sad about it.
Yeah, it just feels bad to mulligan this hand, period. Like,
I'd keep it. Yeah, going
the
second.
The worst card in the hand is actually Bring to Light, which is weird to say.
Yeah. No, 100%. It's like, oh man, this Bring to Light. Yeah, if I was going second, I'd just like turn him on the Ragavan and be upset about it that I couldn't do anything clever. But
Like, you really look at this hand, and if you're on, like, a mold of four, mold of five, you just cry. You just scoop up right then.
There is one point in time this hand... No, even a mold of five, you ditch the snap and the sylvan safekeeper, and this hand is still goated.
Yeah.
There is one point in time this hand is terrible, and that's if you're against three creature decks.
Yes.
Then this hand is
three,
butts.
Three Yevas at the table.
If you... This hand is a mulligan in my locals.
Okay.
Yeah. It'll be. It's gonna love like that. Muldrotha, Jetmir, whatever weird stuff Austin's bringing. Dockside's gonna make two.
It'll pay for itself. That's it.
Dockside's fixing.
Well, that's all I pretty much got. Do you have anything else, Josh?
I don't really have much else to add. If you want to play a deck with a very, very low floor and a decently high ceiling, this is a really, really fun deck to play. It's very easy to get the hang of, but when you really get into it, there's some uber big brain plays that you get to put together with it, depending on what's in your deck, and I really enjoy that. We didn't even talk about the survival of the fittest loops. We're not going to talk about the survival of the fittest loops, because we'll be here forever, but there's crazy stuff you can do, and it's really fun. So if you want like a fast-paced, fun-to-play deck that has a proven track record at tournaments being very consistent and very good, this is the deck for you. And also, we have, in my humble, completely unbiased opinion, actually, though, I'm not, I said that like I'm going to say something sarcastic, but this is something I genuinely believe. The Tana Malcolm Discord, the channel, the Tana Malcolm channel on the Malcolm Discord, is the best decklist Discord I have ever been a part of. Real discussion. Like actual respect for each other's opinions, which is a lot of decklist discords. It's just someone, one person talking down to everybody else, more or less, is how a lot of them go. These are like everyone exchanging ideas, information, like testing data is posted there. Everyone's really freaking nice. And the moderators are people who all actually still play the deck, still test with the deck, and are very open to feedback. Like, we have more than once put things in the actual CDH decklist database that other people in the Discord have been like, yeah, I swear by this, this is good. And we're like, all right, we'll test it out. We trust you. And they were right. So it's a really, really great place to be if you just like the process of brewing a CDH deck, an established meta deck. This is one, and we let a lot of people participate in it. So it's great. Like, there's a reason there's so many names on the CDH decklist database version of this deck, the one that everyone looks up when they find the deck. Not the good version, though. The good version's on EDH Top 16, because it actually goes to tournaments. But the one that everyone looks at that's in SEO still has, like, a bazillion names on it. And the reason is because every time someone gives us a meaningful contribution to the deck, we just put their name on it, because... It's like, fuck it, we're not here to clout farm off this deck. That's why most people are on the CDH decklist database, which is why EDH Top 16 is better. But
hell yeah,
we
results based.
We're here to just kind of show the philosophy we take to it is the database version of the deck, or the deck, the, I guess a better way of putting it is the server version of the deck. The collaborative deck list that we all work on together is a very generic version of the list with the most generic options, none of the spicy stuff. And then if you want to innovate on it and use the spicy stuff, you can come to the Discord and see that none of us are actually playing that list. It's
really, so far gone from it.
No, we're all like three or four cards off from it.
Oh, okay.
And the cards that we have different are all very different. We're all very passionate about which ones and why. But the point is, like, we're all very respectful of each other's opinions. There's a lot of information and data being exchanged. Whenever someone says they've been testing something and they have results, everyone listens and pays attention. And it's just a wonderful deck brewing community. So big love, big shout outs to the Malcolm Discord. If the Malcolm Discord wasn't around, I probably still wouldn't be playing this deck, just because I love the community. And it keeps me playing the game.
Yeah, I actually just recently joined the Malcolm Discord myself. I have been dabbling in Malcolm File Smasher myself, trying to revive an old archetype that I was near and dear to me way back when, Opus Thief. And I want to start with a Grixis shell. And I thought, what better than a Malcolm File Smasher? So I started there, and just seeing and interacting and just, you know, poking around on that Discord mainly. It's nothing like the other Discords that I've been on. I've been on the Najeela one, the Urza one. Urza one's by far the worst, personally, in my opinion. Ugh. But, you know, it's nice. It's nice to have that refreshing space in the community where it's actually
I think a lot of deck building servers, people are more are invested in something besides actually improving the deck, whether that be the attention that one gets from being recognized by the community as an expert in the deck, or whether that be the power that one gains from being a Discord moderator if you're into that, or whatever. I think there's a lot of side motivations in a lot of deck discords, or a lot of like communities like this in general. But in the Malcolm Discord, the vast majority of people who are active there are people who are playing this deck at their locals, and their main motivation is winning their fucking locals. And so because of that, there's actually the spirit of like improving and being competitive, because if it gets too clout farmy or too like internet CDH, one of the people who's like trying to like just win dual lands at their locals every week is, or every month or however often their locals are, is going to come in and
Shauna.
Like, yeah, no, like someone like one of the grinders like Shauna, who's not grinding this deck, but someone who's doing something similar to Shauna, is going to come in and be like, hey, like, I don't really care about all this stuff. I want to know, has anyone tested combat research yet? I have locals in 3 days, and I want to know if I should put in combat research for Bowmasters or not. Has anyone tested it? And so that's the kind of stuff that goes on in the Discord, and it doesn't really get off topic that much because there's a lot of people who really care about just grinding with the deck.
Absolutely. So, as we wrap up here, because I'm just about all out of coffee, where can they find you? Where can everyone find you?
So you can find me at Elder Drunken Highlander on YouTube. I am one of the three amazing, fabulous co-hosts. I'm also Drunken Elder on Twitter. That's me and my other co-hosts as well. That's all the Elder Drunken Highlander stuff. If you want to see me be in a podcast, I'm in a brand new podcast with Lauren, a.k.a. the MTG underscore hot dog, and it's called Punt Pals. It's about the 75% of players who don't win CDH games or just Magic games in general, Commander games, and it's really, really entertaining and fun. It's good comedy. It's a good time. I highly recommend watching it. We have a jingle. Billy, we have a fucking jingle.
I know. It was great. It as soon as I heard the first, like, the strum, I went, Josh is playing his ukulele. Yeah, and then I hear your voice. I'm like, yes, I'm here for it.
Yeah. Lauren was like, can we get a jingle for the podcast? And I was like, say less. I've been waiting for this moment my entire life. So we have a really good jingle. I won't spoil it for you, but it's been stuck in my head. It is so catchy. It's a great time. And the last place you can find me is on the Eminence Gaming website, the fabulous people behind EDH Top 16, which you've mentioned like 4 billion times in this podcast. I write articles for them sometimes. And it's really cool. So if you want to read about some of my weird decks, then you can read some of my articles there too.
Absolutely. I think you're also a professor on CDHU or teacher on the Tana Malcolm section of CDHU. So yeah. If you want to learn from Josh, either check out his Discord or check out CDHU Discord. If you don't know how to get a hold of that, message one of us. We'll get you in there.
I'll tell you right now, and it's okay to say this. Bonnie gave me permission to say this, but It's my entire presence on CDHU, the only reason I exist on CDHU is to funnel people into the Tana Malcolm Discord. Because the only reason CDHU exists is because there's not a lot of good deck building discords out there that actually help people improve. But in my case, I have one of the few ones that's like actually really good. So I have permission just to get people from CDHU into the other Discord, which is great. So
just join the check out the Malcolm Discord. Let us know.
Yeah. Join CDHU because it's a great place to find practice games, but also join Tana Malcolm Discord for the Tana Malcolm discussions.
Absolutely. And we'll be around in there. I'm on a couple of them. I help out quite a bit on the CDHU Discord. A couple of my decks, Najila mainly. That's kind of like my thing now.
My problem apparently is this is my only meta deck, so none of my other decks are on CDHU. And if they were on CDHU, I'd ask for them to be removed.
Don't spoil the surprise. Josh, like, are you running a cookout?
Just more like, I don't want to like lie to a new player and make them think that Brawl and Shabraz is an easy meta deck to pick up and learn and play. It's not.
No, I'll be 100% honest. Josh and I did a deck exchange, 2 months ago, give or take? It was right after Punt City. I made a copy of his card for card of his Braylon Shabraz. He made a copy of my Najila deck. We played for about a month, came back, talked about what we discovered and what we liked and didn't like. I've been playing for a long time and I knew the decks pretty well. But man, Braylon Shabraz has lines that I didn't. It took me a second to just go, oh my God, I could do that. Like, it's nuts. It is so much fun. Like, I can't, honestly, I really can't wait to bring you on just to talk about that deck. So, and the Zyrus deck. The Zyrus one, that's been your newest baby that I've played against. And, like, we want to talk about wins out of nowhere. That's a win out of nowhere deck.
It really is. I surprised myself. The deck is still new to me, and I'm still working on the lines. So sometimes I'll win, and I'll be like, oh, yeah, I'm winning this turn. Oh, my gosh. Okay, let's go. Cast Spellseeker. All right. It's awesome.
We're going for it.
Yeah. Like, I forget. It's from something, but, like, someone's like, we're going places. I don't know where, but we're going places. That's what that deck is. It's wonderful.
I forgot what movie that is. Hey, do us a favor. Tweet at us with what movie that's from, because I'm pretty sure that's a movie reference.
Yeah, I'm decently sure that, yeah. Oh, well.
Oh, we'll figure it out. Someone will figure it out for us, hopefully.
There we go.
But, hey, that's it for us. I'm Commander. I'm Billy from Commander and Coffee. Do the like, share, subscribe thing. Tell your friends. Tell your enemies. Tell your frenemies. I don't care what you do.
Tell the friends of your enemies.
Yeah, tell the friends of your enemies. Even, you know, the friend of my enemy is my friend, or something like that, right? But yeah, thank you, Josh, so much for coming on here. I really appreciate everything you do in the community and for CEDH in general. And it's an absolute blast playing with you and hanging out with you. I can't wait to head down to Cookout. It's going to be a nice drive.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really fun. Yeah, you'll see Billy and yet another CEDH vlog come up this summer. It's going to be exciting.
It's going to be a really good one. Because we got, what is it, an 18-hour drive?
Some crazy amount of time.
some large amount of number. We have like 5 pit stops to pick people up on our way down. So, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun. But that's it for us. Have a great one, guys.
See ya.